Here it's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In Wisconsin, nearly 1,500 people are on the waiting list for a life-saving organ.
Some have been on the list for less than a month, others waiting for more than 5 years.
Although it can be bleak, there are successes. In January, after coping with a life-threatening illness, a Portage woman had a successful heart and lung transplant.
That procedure has happened less than 25 times in state history. The logistics are complex, and they require a big healthcare team to make it happen. But if successful, the results are life-altering.
Courtney Zableski is a 30-year-old mother. She's an active hiker and has been recovering from her surgery for 4 months. Courtney, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hi, thank you.
What was it like to get that call and to hear that it's time? It's time for you to enter the operating room and undergo heart and lung transplants.
Terrifying. I actually almost didn't answer the phone because I thought it was spam at first, being New Year's Day. I muted it and then answered and immediately started bawling and rushed to the hospital and then had another panic attack once getting there.
Who did you think of when you learned that it was time?
My son. So before the transplant, he wasn't worried at all. He just kept saying that he couldn't wait for new organs because mom would get to play with them again. So when I got the call, I was just crying, A, out of fear, but also that he was going to get his wish.
So you go to the hospital, and you know this moment is probably going to come, but when does it start to set in?
It didn't really hit me until they pulled me down for the prep room, where you kind of just wait for them to actually do the surgery. And sitting there, I was by myself in there, is when it all hit me. I actually had them call Dr. Shaw in to like try to calm me down. That's when it fully hits you that you're about to have a huge life-changing surgery.
What was your health like before this transplant surgery? What were you going through?
It was starting to decline a lot. I was still going to the gym, but it was basic, just walking on a treadmill. I couldn't walk up the stairs in my house anymore. I couldn't do any sort of incline up hills, like even outside on a sidewalk. If it had a hill, I couldn't walk it anymore. I couldn't run with my kid. So it was definitely declining. It wasn't bottomed out yet, but they had just started talking about putting me on oxygen. So it was going downhill pretty fast.
What was it like being on the waiting list? Can you describe that process?
When I first got listed, it was kind of nerve-wracking. It was a lot of testing and like thinking about what life would be like after a transplant. And then I was on the list for 84 days. So I was counting, but I also wasn't focusing on it because somewhere in me, I was convinced I wasn't going to have the transplant. I didn't think I was going to get a match. So I kind of just pretended like I wasn't going to get the call and just kept documenting days of like what I was doing that day.
You wanted to know every detail about the surgery and you requested a meeting with the surgeon before the procedure. What was that like?
Reassuring, I guess. I had done research about heart-lung transplants prior to my meeting with him. And heart-lungs aren't common, so there isn't a lot of research to find. So I had asked for another appointment with a surgeon. I ended up getting a Zoom appointment with Dr. Shaw. And I just wanted him to explain exactly like where they were going to cut me, which there was two options, and like how they were going to do it and when the organs got there, how long I wasn't going to have organs. I wanted to know all the details. And it, in a way, was really reassuring. Just knowing like what they were going to do to my body.
Courtney, what has the journey in recovery been like for you?
Rough. Not what I expected. The first week and a half, like I said, I was on a lot of pain medication. So I wasn't fully there for a lot of it. And I was really tired. I went into rejection and got, I believe it was double pneumonia. 13 days in, which I hadn't planned for. I didn't even think it was going to be a possibility. I know it was, but I just didn't think it was. And so I had a lot of hallucinations. I was very paranoid. They ended up having to reintubate me. And so that was a struggle in itself. When I woke up the second time, I no longer had a voice. Walking was even more difficult than the first time around. So recovery was really rough towards the end, and now it has been incredible. It's 20 times better than prior to transplant. So now it's going well. But at first it was hard.
Because you had started progressing and then you had this setback of double pneumonia, which you didn't anticipate.
Yeah, and the rejection.
Yeah. What is rejection like? What happened?
My oxygen was really low.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure which part, if it was the pneumonia or if it was the rejection, because they happened at the same time. And I don't know if they were correlated. I'm sure later on Dr. Shaw can maybe speak on that. I'm not
sure.
But it was almost painful. I remember asking the nurse to listen to my chest and she said it was a friction rub because I would breathe in and it would feel like your phone vibrating almost, but painfully and inside your bones.
In order to have an organ donation, someone in this world has to die. And I understand you wrote a letter to the family of your donor.
I did.
What did you want them to know?
So I actually wrote two separate pages. So, because I was trying to think of how I would be on the other side of this. And so the first page is very vague. It was, I'm not sure if you ever want to meet me. And if you don't, I understand. I'm not sure I would want to meet me if I was in your shoes. So I gave them like a very vague, my last Facebook post before I had surgery was pretty much like, if I don't make it, I hope that I put enough love into this world. I hope my son thinks he had the best mom. If I do make it, I can't wait to, you know, do certain things. And I thanked my donor and I said how selfless they were and how I was hoping that everyone was thinking of their family as well, because while I'm going through this surgery, their family is having devastating news. And the second page was like, what I plan on doing with these organs, the activities that I wasn't able to do while on the list that I hope to do now. And then I stated a little bit about my family and I included a family photo.
Did you get a response?
I have not. I also only mailed it though a month ago, and it's still very new. So I definitely, if they plan, big if, on responding to me, I wouldn't expect it anytime soon. I'm sure they're still dealing with their grief.
Sure. Courtney, thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah.
That is Courtney Zableski, a recent recipient of a heart and lung transplant. Now we turn to two of Zableski's surgeons to learn more about these complex procedures. Dr. Yu Shaw is a UW Health cardiothoracic and heart and lung transplant surgeon. And Dr. Dan McCarthy is a cardiothoracic surgeon who specializes in lung transplantation. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. McCarthy, a dual heart-lung transplant is rare. And last year, you've said only 22 centers in the country perform this procedure. It also seems you're at the mercy of the organs in some respects. If most organs can only live outside the body for a matter of hours, all of these logistical things have to come together. Can you talk a little bit more about transporting organs that need to get delivered on time?
Yeah, absolutely. So we will take a look at hearts and lungs essentially from anywhere in the United States. It's not uncommon that we'll use organs from the other side of the country. And that means that we need to have a well-orchestrated series of events that allow our recovery team to get there safely, to link up with teams that are recovering other organs. Then we have to make sure that the organs return safely. And as you mentioned, the time becomes really important. What's nice about our modern practice right now is that there's emerging technologies that have helped maintain viable organs for longer and longer outside of the body. For example, in this case, we used a special temperature regulated cooler to transport both the lungs and heart back to Courtney, which allowed us to feel more confident about how those organs were preserved until we were able to reestablish normal blood flow to them.
Dr. Shah, as your patient, Courtney Zableski, was about to undergo this major surgery, she calls you in and wants to know more about what exactly is going to happen. When you hear that type of request from your patient, what are some things that occurred to you to say? How did you approach that conversation?
In general, when patients are approaching transplant, in listening to her story about this, honestly, for the first time on the show, I generally anticipate like an element of excitement, but also combined with an element of potentially being scared. They're going to undergo a big operation where you take out, in some cases, one failing organ, but in her case, two failing organs, and replacing them with new ones. So the first thing I always anticipate is that there may be potential anxiety about undergoing this operation. And so step one is always to think about finding ways to first identify what her state of mind might be. And certainly if there is that element of anxiety, to try to alleviate any fears that she may have going into this operation, that we've done all the planning that we have done to safely get her through this operation and to ensure her that all the teams that are working very hard for her will, that she's in good hands and who will get her safely through this operation. And certainly when, you know, a patient asks the questions of how are we going to do this, I think the more information is better than less. And the more that I tell her, the more she'll feel safe in getting through this operation.
I would also imagine part of this is also managing your own nerves and expectations and saying, we've done all our planning. We've made all of these steps. You know, did you also have to think through that yourself?
Yeah, I think I would probably be lying if I said I wasn't anxious myself going into this operation. It is a highly complex operation that includes the implantation of both the heart and lungs. And what's different about implanting the heart alone or the lungs alone is that we also have to think about the complex interaction of the heart with the lungs, because the blood flow that goes through the heart are going to pass through the lungs and then come back to the heart and go to the rest of her body. And we have to think about both organs simultaneously when it comes to reperfusing the organs and also getting her through the operation so that both organs function well together.
Dr. McCarthy, the average time a person spends on a waiting list apparently in Wisconsin is only about a month, and that's shorter than the national average. Why do some patients in our state have shorter wait times?
So all transplant programs are monitored, and there's public reporting on some elements of their performance. And that includes, it's called the time to transplant. This is available online for anybody to take a look at. And for example, the University of Wisconsin UW-Health Lung Transplant Program, you know, right now is, you know, among the top in the country in terms of time to transplant. And there's a lot of different things that go into that. You know, part of it has to do with sort of the attitude and strategies of the people involved. So Dr. Shah and I are very conscientious about making sure that every organ offer we get, we don't miss an opportunity that could save somebody's life. And so sometimes that means putting extra effort into it, perhaps sending a team out to personally investigate the organs if we think they might be borderline. And sometimes they're not good enough and we have to cancel. And sometimes it turns out they're even better than we expected. So there are things that the team can do to help reduce that waiting time. But then there's also elements, you know, that may work in our favor structurally. For example, being in the middle of the United States, it allows us to access both coasts. Whereas if you live on one coast, you know, to your east or to your west, there's an ocean, which may, you know, affect how many good quality organ offers are available. And then there's other elements that have to do with sort of regional or geographic variation in terms of things like donor rates. There are parts of the country where the number of people willing to be organ donors is much lower than other parts. And that can affect access to organs for those patients.
Dr. Shah, in terms of donor rates, what do you want people to know about the importance of organ donation?
I think it's important to know that right now in the United States, organ donation is essentially an opt-in situation where you can, at the time of getting your driver's license, you can decide to be an organ donor. In some other countries, such as Spain, it's kind of an opt-out situation. We are definitely limited in donor access around the country. There's, I think, 1,400 people waiting for organs in Wisconsin, and over 100,000 people waiting for organs, for example, in Illinois. And around the country, there are just so many people waiting for organs who are, and these are people that aren't expected to live very long without a transplant. So I would say if it's something that you're willing to consider to offer the potential gift of life to patients such as Courtney and others waiting for life-saving organs, you know, certainly there may be religious objections or cultural objections, but for those people that, you know, are absolutely willing to offer this gift of life, but just haven't had the opportunity to, you know, declare that they would be willing to do that. If you say become a person in the situation of where it's unclear, then you kind of leave that agency out of your hands. Like other people will be deciding for you. And oftentimes, you know, if you're not sure, or if we don't know if you want to be an organ donor or not, it may change the outcome of what happens if, God forbid, you know, you get into a situation where you may become an organ donor. And if you can, I would say sign up to be an organ donor.
Dr. Shah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. McCarthy, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
That is Dr. Dan McCarthy, a cardiothoracic surgeon who specializes in lung transplantation. We also heard from Dr. Yu Shah, a UW Health cardiothoracic and heart and lung transplant surgeon. They performed a rare double organ heart and lung transplant surgery on 30-year-old Courtney Zablusky, who we spoke with earlier. UW Health Transplant Center recently completed its 1,000th heart transplant operation. The first heart transplant was performed in 1973 at University Hospital, and the first lung transplant occurred at the hospital in 1988.